Walking on the Sun, All Star, Then the Morning Comes, Can't Get Enough of You Baby. These songs and many more have been brought to us by the band Smash Mouth, which are still touring and will be releasing another album coming up here in the next few months. And making a connection right now, joining us on Round Trip with Dave-O is Paul Delisle from Smash Mouth. How you doing?
What up? How you doing, Dave-O?
Pretty good. Now, let's get the question right away that everyone wants to know. When is the new Smash Mouth album coming out?
I just talked to our manager about 2 hours ago, and the release date is set for middle of July. I think it was July 17th or around there or something. So it's a definite release date.
How is the sound of it going to be compared to, like, say, the late 90s Smash Mouth?
It's very similar. I mean, we kind of do what we do. And we like that sound. It's natural for us. It's just kind of our thing. And but it's, you know, it's got a couple surprises in there that you'll hear when it comes out.
I know you guys are actively playing shows across the U.S. right now. What is the current lineup of Smash Mouth?
The current lineup is the same with a new drummer, Randy Cook, playing drums. Michael Hippie, as we call him, is still on keyboards. Greg, Steve, and me. And we just got back from Iraq, dude.
Oh, how was that?
It was cool, man. It was crazy and cool.
I bet it opened your eyes a little bit too, right?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, a lot of dirt, a lot of rocks, a lot of tee walls. They have these things called tee walls and upside down half pipes and stuff. And
ooh,
we got to wear flak jackets and helmets and stuff. It was pretty neat.
That does sound neat. So let's go back in the day, as in 1994-ish. You guys formed in San Jose. How did you guys all meet?
Well, we met through, back then, at the time, San Jose had a really, like, burgeoning club scene for original bands and cover bands as well. There was sort of a lot of work for everybody. Like, the clubs, there was a, you know, you could go 7 nights a week to a handful of clubs, and they'd be packed, and there'd be different bands playing. So I was kind of a fan of Greg played in this cover band called The Gents, and that I was kind of a fan of him. And he'd come to see my cover band, and we became friends and started working on original music together. And then Steve started showing up at our shows and kind of befriended us, and then just kind of poached us. And, like, he's like, let's start a band, you know? And we were kind of impressed that Steve was a rapper and actually had a record deal. So when Greg and I started working with Steve, that's how it started.
And I've always assumed you guys must be football fans with a name like Smash Mouth. Is that true? And then what's the story of how you came up with that name?
Steve and I are. Greg's not.
He doesn't like football?
I just don't think he watches it that much. He likes, like, weird sports like boxing and stuff or whatever, you know, skateboarding but boxing and skateboarding, it's a weird match. But the band was named for my original drummer, Kevin, who, when we started, it's like, we already have a name. It's called Smash Mouth before we even started. I'm like, whatever, you know, name's a name.
So no weird story or anything? It just kind of, you know, was what it was?
Well, I guess Kevin and Steve's angle was that's how we play rock and roll. Like, you know, we're gonna get to the top, and we're gonna take no prisoners kind of attitude, you know.
And staying with kind of the sports theme here and the lingo, you guys used momentum to really help launch your careers. You got signed to a record deal, and what I mean by that, of course, is you did the near impossible thing of getting a local radio station to play your song "Nervous in the Alley," and then after a concert, you rode that momentum into a record deal with Interscope. Now, what do you remember about the night you were signed to a record deal? Was it kind of a surreal experience?
Here for me, this was my experience. Okay, we had played a couple months before at the Roxy and the Whiskey in on the Sunset Strip as a showcase. But we had starting to record our first album. We had all this music together. And we kind of didn't do so well at the showcases, so we thought it was over. We're like, well, let's just finish the record anyways with Eric Valentine, our producer. So we did the whole first record all by ourselves. And then I had planned on going... I had this surf trip planned in Big Sur, California. I had it planned for weeks. And Greg and Steve decided that they were going to go back down to Hollywood and try again one more shot, you know, with Carson Daly, our friend who had been our friend for a long time. Actually used to, like, roadie for us and stuff. So I'm like, well, do you want me to go with you guys? I'll cancel my trip. No, you didn't plan this trip. Nothing's going to happen. We didn't think anything was going to come from it. So I'm in Big Sur for, like, you know, 4 days, 5 days. That's when we got signed. This is before any of us had cell phones, and I'm out in the middle of nowhere. So I had no idea till I got home. And I remember leaving Big Sur going, man, what's going to happen, man? Nothing's going to happen with him. But I get home, and there's, like, 10 messages on my answering machine, each one more urgent than the last, going, dude, you got to call us, dude. We got a record deal. You got to call us, you know.
Did you believe him at first?
At first, I'm like, whatever, you know, no way. And then I call a little bit, and, you know, the next day I had a check in the mailbox for $25,000. You know, like, I thought it was one of those publisher clearinghouse fake checks or something, you know. It was neat for me because I was like, I thought we had kind of blown our chance, you know. So all this happened when I was just isolated for like 4 days, you know.
Nice. I wish something like that would happen to me.
I know.
So how did you know Carson Daly then? I didn't know you guys knew him.
Carson was, when he was really young, like 21, he was starting his DJ career. He was actually the nighttime, like late night DJ at a radio station in San Jose called KOME. And he didn't really know anybody up here. You know, he's from LA. And he just started coming to the clubs and just sort of befriended us. And he liked our band. He kind of took a shining to Smashmouth and started coming to our shows and actually helping us with our gear. We played at his birthday party in his backyard. You know, this is when he's like a late night DJ. So he's not, you know, the Carson Daly we know today. And it was a friendship, you know, and then his career. So, you know, he got the drive time slot. Then he got hired by K-Rock. It was a friendship first that we were both kind of supporting each other, you know, a great friend and a big help, you know?
Well, and that first album was, is it Fush You Mang? Is that how you pronounce that?
Fush You Mang, yeah.
Okay. That came out in 97. First of all, where did you guys come up with that name?
I don't know. Steve and Greg love watching Scarface, the movie Scarface. And it was their take on Al Pacino saying, well, I can't say it on the radio.
I gotcha.
Okay.
Well, what kind of expectations did you guys have for that record before it got released?
We had absolutely no expectations for it. In fact, we had completed it. We did the whole record ourselves with Eric Valentine, our producer, our manager, lent us some money. The artwork, everything, the car you see on the front cover, that's Greg's car. You know, the everything we did ourselves. And we made it for like a snapshot of a period of time in our lives because we didn't think anything was going to happen with it, and we thought we were done.
Yeah, and then the single Walking on the Sun exploded the pop charts. It was number two in the pop charts, number one in the modern rock charts. And I mean, so you said you didn't have, you know, a lot of expectations. That song in particular, how long before that album came out did you guys come up with that song? And did you guys think that was your strongest single on that album?
You know, personally, for me, I have to, I got to fess up with this. I wasn't so sure about it. It was an old song that Greg had. Our original drummer, Kevin, was going through a box of his demo tapes and found this. It was kind of more of a rap song. Like it had a totally different beat to it. He's like, we got to do this song. So I came up with the idea of changing the bass line and making it more kind of groovy. And then it kind of clicked. So as we were recording the album, you know, I was thinking, man, you know, I've been doing this my whole life, and everything I record never goes anywhere, it does anything, so this one probably isn't going to either. But I knew that there was something special about it, and I knew that we made a good record. I thought all the songs were pretty good, so I wasn't sure about a single.
Well, don't laugh at me on this question here, but Can't Hardly Wait is definitely one of my favorite movies of the 90s, and I'm being serious about that. But you guys had Can't Get Enough of You Baby on that soundtrack. What did you think of the movie? Did you ever see it, and did you ever get to meet Jennifer Love Hewitt?
Oh, yeah, we loved it, man, because the cool thing was when we did the video for Can't Get Enough of You, Jennifer Love Hewitt's in it, and a lot of the cast members are in it as well as, like, extras. So we kind of got to know them, and they're all really cool kids and everything. You know, these young Hollywood actor kids, but they had good attitudes and they were cool. And Jennifer Love Hewitt was cool, and so it kind of made us, like, when the movie actually came out, like, oh, we know these. I know that guy. He was in our video, you know, and it was pretty cool. They were cool.
I love the guy that calls Barry Manilow from the phone booth. Remember that scene? So
that's a good movie.
Your second album came out in 1999. It was Astro Lounge. And I hear a lot of bands say that after they have success, you know, they're kind of forced to try and duplicate that again by the record company with a near identical sound. But I've always thought this album in particular, your second one, was much different from the first, and that you guys were kind of given a longer leash than most bands do. Do you agree with that statement?
There's an old saying in the music business, you have your whole life to make your first record and 6 months to make your second one. Now, Greg was smart in when this whole thing was blowing up and we were touring constantly. He had a little recorder in the back of the bus and he right away started working on songs for the second album. So he was thinking ahead, knowing that we had a 2-record deal with Interscope. He's going to make this, you know, he's got a real chance here. Now he's got a record deal because, you know, we weren't signed when we made Fush You Mang. So he, you know, I got to give Greg a lot of credit for that. He really, you know, maximized an opportunity. And you know, we got it together. As soon as we got off the road, we went right into the rehearsal space and started working up our next record, knowing that this was just desperately trying not to be a one-hit wonder, you know.
That takes some discipline, too, you know, when you've got that much success and you're touring the first time. What was that like, by the way, like touring the first time?
It's more like now all of a sudden, you know, your equipment's a little better. You actually have a place to where you can rehearse. So for us, it, you know, this is our hobby. It wasn't so much discipline as, wow, this is fun. Our amps work, you know, and we have a place to play where the cops aren't going to come. Like, so it was a lot easier, you know, second record because we didn't have distractions of amps blowing up and cops coming, you know.
And on that second record, All Star was a top 5 hit on pretty much every single chart. Where did the idea for that song come from?
I remember Greg came in with that song. The way we write songs is if you have a song, I'm a songwriter too. It's just Greg's a little bit better than me, you know. And the way Greg likes to work is if you have a song, come in with it done. Come in with it as complete as you can. So one day, I was Greg and I at the time were both living in Santa Cruz, and I was at this bar, and I'd been gone for a week, like doing this other session thing. And he comes into the bar at, like, one of the mornings, like, come out to my truck, man. I got these 2 new songs I just did. You got to hear, you know. And he had demos of Then the Morning Comes and All Star, and I'm like, wow, these are really good, man. These are really, really good. But to be honest with you, again, I thought Then the Morning Comes was going to be the first single, but you know they both ended up doing pretty well, so I love them both.
Well, Then the Morning Comes was in that Nissan commercial. I remember that. Did you guys get some pimped out Nissans to drive after that?
No, and I could, you know, right about now I could do with a new car.
Couldn't we all, right?
No, my car's fine.
And then my favorite all-time Smash Mouth song is also on that album, Waste. And I've also thought the lyrics of that song are extremely, you know, strong, kind of a nostalgic type of song. How'd you guys come up with that one?
Well, again, Greg has the ability of, you know, he's not a one-trick pony. He, you know, him being the chief songwriter, he writes, for Smash Mouth songs, it's, you know, our, you know, the game plan was more like upbeat, you know, in your face, just kind of trying to take all the music that we like and write the kind of songs that we would want to hear. But Greg had also written all these, like, he also could write these, like, these beautiful ballads. So Steve heard it one day and was like, man, we gotta put that on the record. You know, it's a beautiful song. I know it's maybe isn't Smash Mouthy, but, and, you know, that's when Greg really flourished, because then he could, you know, he doesn't write bad songs. It doesn't matter what style he's in. And I think it kind of helped give us we weren't pigeonholed with one particular style, because Greg, you know, Greg really is a brilliant songwriter.
My second favorite Smash Mouth song, I think, is one of your babies, Pacific Coast Party. Didn't you write that one?
I did. Thank you very much for recognizing
that. Is that right? I'm just giving you some love here, you know?
That one came about where I had written it and I didn't show it to anybody for like a month, you know, or whatever. And then Greg and I were at my house one day working out songs for the third record, and And he's like, you got anything for me? I'm like, no, I don't got anything really. And my girlfriend at the time went, play him the disco song you wrote. Come on, play the disco song you wrote. I'm like, nah, he's not going to like it, you know. But I played it for him, and he's like, play it again. I played it again, and then he's like, you don't know what you just did. And he left. He just like left my house and went right to the studio and started putting up tracks. And then we did a demo of it. And Greg, you know, was like, Paul wrote a hit. This is going to be our first single. And we demoed it, and it came out really good. And it was pretty flattering for me. You know, I'm a songwriter too. But it's cool of Greg to be, you know, we've always been team players. It's like, man, this is the best song on the record so far. So, you know, I got to give Greg credit for that. But I had it done for my, I just wasn't going to show it to anybody. You know, I thought they'd think it was dumb.
Something good came out of that X then, right?
Yeah, and then it got done properly. And that's exciting, you know.
Well, where did the start of that song, because I love the lyrics as well, but the start of that song, like the first 15, 20 seconds kind of has that game show feel to it. I love that. How did you guys come up with that?
I was just thinking of a sort of like OJs or spinners, like Philadelphia Soul kind of sound of like having backup singers, like, you know, call and response with the lead vocalist and stuff. And just thinking, and then I just got this idea, and it was kind of late at night, perhaps after a couple cocktails, I'm not sure, you know. And I just kind of ran with it, and I'm like, eh, this is kind of cool, I'm going to work on it a bit, you know. But I had the song completed when I'm hearing strings, I'm hearing backup vocals, I'm hearing all this stuff, you know. And Greg, you know, once again, is great at like getting that stuff down, and it just that demoing that song was like super easy.
And you guys have had several more albums since the late 90s and early 2000s. One of my favorites was a Christmas album you guys put out. I've always wondered though, like when a band puts that kind of stuff out, is that something you actually really enjoy doing, or something you're basically kind of told you have to do? Did you enjoy that?
Oh yeah, no, that was fun because we got to pick. You know, a lot of people do the typical, you know, like Silent Night or so, but there's a lot of other great Christmas songs, like the Kinks song or the Ramones song, or, you know, or even Greg wrote one. There's a lot of great Christmas songs that you know, could be redone and kind of Smash Mouth-ized, if that's a word.
Well, it is.
But that was a lot of fun doing that record.
What's the future for Smash Mouth? What do you guys see in the future?
Well, we're putting this new record out, and you know, this is our baby, man. It's our thing. It's weird. Like a lot of the bands that we started with aren't around anymore. And for us, it's just like, we're friends and this is what we do. And we're just going to keep going and writing songs and recording them and touring, you know, at whatever level, it's just what we love. And we love each other and we're proud of our music.
Well, speaking of the whole touring thing, I've read your website and I've heard a lot of people that have seen you. I've never actually had the pleasure of seeing you guys, but I hear it's quite the experience. Tell us more about your shows and what makes them different.
Well, one thing about our shows that I think are different is a lot of people will come up to us afterwards and be like, man, I didn't know you guys. All I knew was that song from Shrek. I didn't know you guys had so many good songs. Like, that's what I'm kind of proud of our albums. We have there's no real filler on any of our records. Plus, we have, five, six, you know, complete original studio albums of material to choose from. So the live show is just bam, bam, bam. And we're just going to hit you with song after song. Even though you might not have heard them on the radio, they still sound like hits. Because, like I said, Greg doesn't write bad songs. So now that we have an arsenal of material, it makes, you know, making the set list super fun. We just try to keep it, you know, at a really high level of excitement and that, you know, everyone's paying attention every minute of the show, you know.